Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're indeed listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. This is indeed Utah Phillips here in the studios of KVMR, our community radio station in Nevada City, California, where a Y2K event, our computers broke down and the quality of our broadcast increased significantly. And we are here in Nevada City, California, where for reasons that should seem obvious, the cats are willing to settle for eight lives. I'm here in the studio with Steve, and he's twirling the knobs and queuing up these tapes here. So much of the stuff I have today is from old tapes that's been transferred again and again. What you were just listening to there at the beginning was a Corroboree celebration dance from the Aboriginal community, the Warramarrin community in Western Australia. I don't know very much about Australia. My God, I don't. I know some good Australian singers, Eric Bogle and Judy Small and some others. Some I've only heard of, as well as the poets. Nonetheless, I was sorting through all of these tapes and things that I have and things that I have stored in my head that I'd forgotten about. Decided I would just do a program of things about Australia. Once again, it's giving an impression. I'm not an historian, as I say. I'm not a documentarian, but just an impression. 1787, I guess it was the first fleet, it was called, exiles. Australia had never been, had hardly ever been explored. Had been touched on once or twice by Captain Cook and Sir Joseph Banks, a few others. But for some reason, the British government decided to exile the entire criminal class of Britain to the end of the earth, to Australia, the transports. And I guess over the next 40 years, 160,000 men, women, and children were transported to the wild coast of Australia. Now, most of those people that were transported had never been more than 10 miles from their birthplace or had ever even seen the sea. They went to an unknown land where they lived on the edge of starvation because nobody knew what to do. Meanwhile, the Aboriginals living around them were living in relative abundance. Matter of fact, it's been said their standard of nutrition was probably higher than the average European diet. Well, some of those transports broke away. They went up into the bush to become outlaws. And it's out of them that come, well, I guess that what I understand to be a prevailing attitude among Australians, and that's a fear, suspicion, and disregard for government. Here's an old ballad song about one of those, sung by John Greenway, Bold Jack Donahue.
In Dublin town I was brought up, in that city of great fame. My honest friends and parents will tell to you the same. 'Twas for the sake of £500 I was sent across the main, for 7 long years in New South Wales to wear a convict's chain. So come all my hearties, we'll roam the mountains high. Together we will plunder, together we will die. We'll wander through the valleys and gallop o'er the plains, and scorn to live in slavery, bound down with iron chains.
I'd scarce been there 12 months or more upon the Australian shore when I took to the highway as I'd oft times done before. 'Twas me and Jackie Underwood and Weber and Walmsley too. These were the true associates of bold Jack Donahoo. So come all my hearties, we'll roam the mountains high. Together we will plunder, together we will die. We'll wander through the valleys and gallop o'er the plains and scorn to live in slavery, bound down with iron chains. Now Donahoo was taken all for a notorious crime and sentenced to be hanged upon the gallows tree so high. But when they came to Sydney jail, he left them in a stew. And when they came to call the roll, they missed bold Donahoo. So come all my hearties, we'll roam the mountains high. Together we will plunder, together we will die. We'll wander through the valleys and gallop o'er the plains and scorn to live in slavery, bound down with iron chains. As Donahoo made his escape to the bush, he went straightway. The people, they were all afraid to travel night or day. For every week in the newspapers was published something new of this brave and dauntless hero, the bold Jack Donahoo. So come all my hearties, we'll roam the mountains high. Together we will plunder, together we will die. We'll wander through the valleys and gallop o'er the plains and scorn to live in slavery, bound down with iron chains. As Donahoo was cruising one summer afternoon, little was his notion his death would be so soon. When a sergeant of the horse police discharged his carabine and called aloud on Donahoo to fight or to resign. Resign to you, you cowardly dogs, a thing I'd never do, for I'll fight this night with all my might, said bold Jack Donahoo. I'd rather roam these hills and dales like wolf or kangaroo than work 1 hour for government, said bold Jack Donahoo. So come all my hearties, we'll roam the mountains high. Together we will plunder, together we will die. We'll wander through the valleys and gallop o'er the plains and scorn to live in slavery, bound down with iron chains. He fought 6 rounds with the horse police until that fatal ball, which pierced his heart and made him start, caused Donahoo to fall. And as he closed his mournful eyes, he bade this world adieu, saying, convicts, all pray for the soul of bold Jack Donahoo. So come all my hearties, we'll roam the mountains high. Together we will plunder, together we will die. We'll wander through the valleys and gallop o'er the plains and scorn to live in slavery, bound down with iron chains.
The bold Jack Donahoo, scorned to work for government. During the Irish Wars, it was a young soldier who was wounded lying out in front of a tavern. And he was dying from gangrene. He was asking the people passing by to throw roses onto him to hide the smell of his decomposition. Called the young soldier cut down in his prime. Well, the British soldiers took that song. This is the folk process in action, folks. They took that song, and they were transported by ship back to England. The sailors on shipboard learned the song from them. And they sang it as Wrap Me Up in My Tarpaulin Jacket, a forecastle shanty. In Britain, the English soldiers sang it, but they localized it for an infirmary in St. James Square. Well, soldiers then went over during the War of 1812 to fight the Battle of New Orleans, and there that song slipped over into the black tradition and becomes St. James Infirmary Blues. Meanwhile, the Irish version, young soldier cut down in his prime, migrated to New England, where it changed gender, became the Bad Girl's Lament. All of them sort of flowed west, where they emerge as the streets of Laredo, as I walked out Laredo one day. But those sailors, they took that song to Australia, and there it emerges as the Dying Stockman. Here's John Greenway.
A fine stalwart stockman lay dying, his saddle supporting his head, while around him his mates all were crying. He rose on his elbow and said, "Wrap me up in my stock whip and blanket, and bury me deep down below, where the dingoes and crows cannot find me, in the shade where the coolabahs grow. Then cut you two stringy bark saplings, place one at my head and my toe, carve on them cross stock whip and bridle, to show there's a stockman below. Wrap me up in my stock whip and blanket, and bury me deep down below, where the dingoes and crows cannot find me, in the shade where the coolabahs grow. And bring out the battered old Billy, place the pannikins all in a row, and drink to the health of the stockman, who soon will be lying below. Wrap me up in my stock whip and blanket, and bury me deep down below, where the dingoes and crows cannot find me, in the shade where the coolabahs grow. But hark, 'tis the howl of the dingo, watchful and weird I must go, for he tolls the death knell of the stockman, who soon will be lying below. Wrap me up in my stock whip and blanket, and bury me deep down below, where the dingoes and crows cannot find me, in the shade where the coolabahs grow.
The Dying Stockman, John Greenway. Now, John Greenway is a kind of mysterious figure in my life. A folklorist, I think he had three doctor's degrees, one of them in anthropology. He roamed Australia collecting songs, poems, and stories. Lived in Denver, Colorado, my Boulder, and he was the first one. It was in 1960. He came to Salt Lake and told me that what I was singing was folk music. I was astonished. He knew Woody Guthrie, he knew Aunt Molly Jackson, recorded a record of Aunt Molly Jackson's songs, he corresponded with Woody. I don't know, I lost track of him for a long time. I was on the train to Denver on a freight train, riding over there to cruise Larimer Street. I'd gone over with Terry Sullivan, and I had no place to stay, so John Greenway put me up that night. I owe him a favor. I understand, though, and perhaps some of you folks that listen on KGNU in Boulder could tell me the fate of John Greenway. I understand he passed on, but I also heard persistent rumors that he had somehow gone mad, and I would like to clear that up, since I say I do owe the man a debt. It was in the basement there of his house when I was staying over that night that he taught me this song, an old Shearer's song from Australia. Let's see if it's still lodged in my head. There once was a shearer by name Bluey Brink, a devil for work and a devil for drink. He could shear his 100 a day without fear, and drink without blinking for a gallon of beer. Now Jim the bartender, who served out the drink, he hated the sight of this hare Bluey Brink, who stayed much too late and who came much too soon, at morning, at evening, at night, and at noon. One day when Jimmy was cleaning the bar, with sulfuric acid he kept in a jar, old Bluey come puffin' and blowin' with thirst, "Whatever you got, Jim, just hand me the first." Now it ain't in no books and it ain't in no prints, but Bluey drank acid with never a squint. Oh, that's the stuff, Jimmy's, I'll strike me stone dead. It'll make me the ringer of Stevenson's shed. All day long, Jimmy trembled inside, thinking for sure that the shearer had died. Too anxious to argue, too troubled to fight, seeing the shearer a corpse in his fright. Next morning when Jimmy opened the bar, there stood the shearer a-blowing for more. His whiskers all singed, his hair all deranged, and holes in his hide like the dog with the mange. He said, "Have you got some more of that stuff? It's powerful strong, but I can't get enough. It gives me great courage to work and to fight, but why does that stuff set me whiskers alight?" Bluey Brink. I guess it is still kind of in there. You know, you go, I spent a lot of time up in Park City, Utah before the redevelopment, before it came chaleted, as we call it. But it was just a dying mining town, Silver King Coalition Mines. I'd go up there through the town, around the bend, and then find an old dirt road that was built by the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, up over Guardsman's Pass. You go to the top there, and you come down into Heber Valley, past the homestead. That's where the Bascos drove the sheep down from up around Camas Prairie, down to the sheep-shearing sheds. And, of course, kids, to get a little extra money, high school money, would work as baggers there to jump on the big bags and tamp the wool down. There's the big sausage-shaped rolls that they were kept in. The sheep shearers, a number of more Australians who had come over during the Second World War. They were disabled or they were too old to go into the army. Meanwhile, the young shearers had left over here to go fight in the war. So there were some of these Australian sheep shearers that were so camped up around there, and it's one of those that taught me this song called 9 Miles from Gundagai. Now, in this song, of course, Bullock Team is a cart pulled by bulls, a provision wagon, and a tucker is the is food, and the tucker box is the box food is kept in. Let's see what else. Well, in here he says the dog sat in the tucker box. He doesn't mean precisely sat. There's a missing aspirant. You guess which one. I'm used to driving bullock teams across the hills and plains. I've teamed out back these 40 years in blazing droughts and rains. I've lived a heap of trouble through without no bloomin' lie. But I can't forget what happened to me 9 miles from Gundagai. 'Twas getting dark, the team was bogged, the axle snapped in two. I lost me matches and me pipe, now what was I to do? The rain come down, 'twas bitter cold, and hungry too was I. And the dog sat in the tucker box 9 miles from Gundagai. Some blokes I know has all the luck, no matter how they fall. But there was I, Lord love a doc, no flaming luck at all. I couldn't make a pot of tea, nor keep me trousers dry. And the dog sat in the tucker box 9 miles from Gundagai. I could forgive the blinking team, I could forgive the rain. I could forgive the dark and cold and go through it again. I could forgive me rotten luck, but hang me till I die. I can't forgive that bloody dog 9 miles from Gundagai. I sometimes forget how much fun it is to sing those songs and to have run onto the people who could teach them to me. Great tradition of poetry in Australia. There are great poets. I guess the best known was Banjo Patterson. Wrote songs of the outback, of the overlanders, the stockmen, the sheep shearers. And poetry was mainly written for urban audiences to give people a taste, a flavor of what was going on thousands of miles from the cities. This, I think, is probably the most common and most popular of Banjo Patterson's poems. He was born in 1864. He died, I guess, in the early 1940s, 1940 or 41. But the reason I like this poem, it's an old recitation. Here's Clancy of the Overflow, Banjo Patterson, recited by Brian Harrison.
I had written him a letter which I had, for want of better knowledge, sent to where I met him down the Lachlan years ago. He was shearing when I knew him, so I sent the letter to him just on spec, addressed as follows: Clancy, of the Overflow. And an answer came, directed in a writing unexpected, and I think the same was written with a thumbnail dipped in tar. 'Twas his shearing mate who wrote it, and verbatim I will quote it: Clancy's gone to Queensland droving, and we don't know where he are. In my wild erratic fancy, visions come to me of Clancy gone a-droving down the Cooper where the western drovers go. As the stock are slowly stringing, Clancy rides behind them, singing, for the drover's life has pleasures that the townsfolk never know. And the bush has friends to meet him, and their kindly voices greet him in the murmur of the breezes and the river on its bars. And he sees the vision splendid of the sunlit plains extended, and at night the wondrous glory of the everlasting stars. I am sitting in my dingy little office, where a stingy ray of sunlight struggles feebly down between the houses tall, and the fetid air and gritty of the dusty, dirty city, through the open window floating, spreads its foulness over all. And in place of lowing cattle, I can hear the fiendish rattle of the tramways and the buses making hurry down the street. And the language uninviting of the gutter children fighting comes fitfully and faintly through the ceaseless tramp of feet. And the hurrying people daunt me, and their pallid faces haunt me as they shoulder one another in their rush and nervous haste, with their eager eyes and greedy, and their stunted forms and weedy. For townsfolk have no time to grow, they have no time to waste. And I somehow rather fancy that I'd like to change with Clancy, like to take a turn at droving where the seasons come and go, while he faced the round eternal of the cash book and the journal. But I doubt he'd suit the office, Clancy of the Overflow.
Clancy of the Overflow. Banjo Patterson. Glenn Orland runs a ranch down there in southern Arkansas. He also wrote the best book of cowboy songs, a collection of them called The Hellbound Train. I haven't seen Glenn for a long time. He was the resident cowboy at many, many folk festivals, the first one to really get out and about and do that. Glenn and I were playing at the San Diego Folk Festival once, and we had stayed up all night carousing and singing and swapping songs and lies. And we were going to go in, and we were going to swap tramp songs with cowboy songs. And I said, Glenn, I don't feel like I can really do this. Besides which, if I was to tell people the truth about riding on freight trains, you know, that it was tough, dirty, and boring, they wouldn't be interested in that. And Glenn says, oh yeah, I've had that problem for years. You know, I get up there, what I really want to say is that I'm covered with cow poop and I've been kicked in the crotch four times today, damn it. But what they want to hear is songs about the jolly cowboy. Well, I thought about that listening to Clancy of the Overflow, because there's another lesser known Australian poet by the name of Wally Dowling, who wrote under the name of Desert Rat, and he wrote a response to Clancy of the Overflow. Here's the drover's life.
As I write this little ditty, perhaps I'm feeling blue, for the swag is wet and sodden, and the fly is blown in two. The rain is pouring heavy, the wind is bloody chill, and I'd rather feel like howling with the dingo on the hill. No doubt this life is thrilling out beneath the desert stars, when your fitting sole companion are a mob of mad galahs. Then the old joke comes to memory. It was written long ago, that the drover's life has pleasures that the townsfolk never know. When you're sitting on a rooter with a green-eyed monkey halt, a quiet horse, they tell you, but sometimes he'll buck and bolt. So you hit him in the shoulders with a pair of 3-inch spurs. Next thing you know, you're sitting in a patch of bloody burrs. when you're tangling with the cleanskins, in the dust and in the heat, and a big mick with a grievance makes a beeline for your seat. You try to make the fence, but the mick's got too much tow. Oh, yes, the drover's life has pleasures that the townsfolk never know. When you're coming down the Canning, where the lonely stages are, and the owner comes to meet you with his brand new motor car, and the dust he raises mingles with that churned up by the feet of the hides that you are droving, some of which perhaps he'll eat. And when you're sitting on a night horse on a dark and stormy night, you see the white horns glisten in the lightning's ghostly light, and you shiver there and wonder if they jump, which way they'll go. Ah, yes, the drover's life has pleasures that the townsfolk never know. Now the tucker's mostly tasty on the Canning route, you know. When the flies have had a gutful and the meat hants have had a go. And when you eat the babbler's brownie, well, it's best to close your eyes, for it's hard to tell the difference between the currants and the flies. Or when you're whipping water till your bellows nearly burst, and your water camel joeys, and your bullocks cry from thirst, when the feed is mostly scanty and the water holes are dry, the squatter's sitting on your back, it's enough to make you cry. So you reckon that you'll truck it in, give something else a go. Yes, the drover's life has pleasures that the townsfolk never know. You battle down a dusty stage to a well that's broken down, or a tank shot full of bullet holes by yokels from the town. And they wonder why you hit the grog and curse their lousy stations. Why, many a man has cut his throat in sheer desperation. So let this be a warning to you fellas of the town who want to go a-droving where the bullocks all come down. For if you go a-droving, you very soon will know that the drover's life has pleasures that it's better not to know. Yes, I sometimes rather doubt it, but then I wouldn't know. They say the drover's life has pleasures that the townsfolk never know.
Of course, that was Blind Kenny Hall down there in Fresno, California, one of the great musicians of the Western world. Another fine poet from Australia, although lesser known, I believe it'd be the poet laureate of Australia, is Henry Lawson. Lawson, I guess, born in 1867, died in 1922. He was not an old man, but he wrote marvelous, marvelous poetry, and a lot of that poetry was put to music by, I guess you'd call him Australia's Jimmy Rogers, a fellow by the name of Slim Dusty. The songs Clancy of the Overflow, The Drover's Life, the songs about the men going away to work, the women stay home to shingle the roof and to draw the water and to make all the clothing and there's been very little poetry about that. Let's listen to one of Henry Lawson's fine poems put to music by Slim Dusty called Andy's Gone with Cattle.
Andy's gone to battle now with drought the red marauder. Andy's gone with cattle now across the Queensland border.
Beautiful song, Andy's Gone with Cattle. The Anzacs. You know, these folks are living at the opposite end of the empire, the way outside fringes, and also a culture that was founded on virtual slavery. Nonetheless, when the empire called, they left the farms and they left the ranches, and they signed up to go overseas to fight in places during the First World War like Palestine and Egypt, Gallipoli against the Turks. Just like that last song there, I don't know who's singing that because these recordings come to me out of the blue, and I don't know where they come from, and sometimes they're not doesn't include who's singing on them. And it's the same with this song here. I don't know who's singing this. It's an old song about the going away of the young men to become Anzacs, and a young woman singing about that. Listen to At the Going Down of the Sun.
Reading the casualty list, waiting for the telegram, wondering if they'd ever see us again.
I was a girl of 13 when my three brothers went to the war. Martin and Robert and Jack, and as I waved from the door, I thought, who in the world could have brothers as handsome as they? Three Australian light horsemen, I see their proud figures today. English with no love for England at all. But their sons were Australians and each bravely answered the call. In their turned up slouch hats and their feathers and leggings and spurs, the Empire, as much as my mother knew these sons were hers. And at the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them lest we forget. The mailman brought cards from Colombo and then from Port Said. Here's a photo of Jack in Egypt, his first camel ride. And look at young Bobby in London, here crossing the Strand. And Martin writes, Mum and Dad, life in the army is grand. The same mailman brought us the news about our darling Jack. Regret to inform you, your son John will never come back. He died of his wounds at Gallipoli, so brave was he. He's awarded the military medal posthumously. The going down of the sun and in the morning, we remember them lest we forget. The telegram came, my mother collapsed and I had the terrible task of breaking the news to my dad. With our old draft horse Punch, my father was ploughing the land. I ran to the paddock, the telegram clutched in my hand. The Irishman read it, said, thank you, now leave me alone. Go on back to the house, help your mother, she's there on her own. He called, stand up, Punch, we have to get on with this job. But I saw his slumped shoulders and I heard his heart-rending sob. And at the going down of the sun and in the morning, we forget. Well, Robert was gassed and he always had pains in his head. And Martin was shell-shocked and he'd have been better off dead. And I'm just an old lady who watched them all go. But I am the one you should ask about war, for I know that all of these years have gone by and I know the grief yet. Yes, I will remember them, I can't forget. And at the going down of the sun, and in the morning.
Oh, yeah. The voice at the beginning of that, by the way, was a veteran of Gallipoli. That's from a tape recording of a whole group of songs about the Anzacs. I had already done a program on the First World War. I wish I'd had that around, or knew that I had it when I put that show together. But that's a very affecting song, isn't it? Let's listen to another piece from that apocryphal tape that floated to me through the blue. I mentioned Slim Dusty, who has created musical settings for so many of the fine Australian poems. I'll give you a chance to hear Slim Dusty sing. He really loved the work of Henry Lawson, the poet, and so he wrote a ballad of Henry Lawson, and this is it.
There's an Aussie we all know, where the western breezes blow. From north to south he's known far and wide. Henry Lawson was his name, but he never rose to fame until he crossed beyond the great divide. In a little place called Grenfell, when the gold was flowing free and the miners and their money came and went, in 1867, when the town was on the spree, Henry Lawson, he was born there in a tent. He grew into a lanky lad when Gulgong was his home. His mind was bright, he had those itchy feet. He wrote a string of verses of the days he used to roam from the dusty track out back to City Street. He drifted with the drovers across the western plains, and he waltzed Matilda down the Loughlin side. From the Barcoo to the Murray, in droughts and flooding rains, oh, the bush was both his mother and his bride. He passed by plain and mountain and by burning desert sand, by shearing shed and lonely cattle camp. And when the beer was flowing, he was there to lend a hand with the mates that shared his life upon the tramp. He sang of wild bush brumbies, of teamsters and their teams, of outer tracks that only bushmen know. He saw the mail coach coming by plains and mountain streams, and he wrote about the lights of Cobb and Co. He told of lonely men out back and women of the West, of folk that fought to live in factory town. But the swaggies of the old bush school were those he knew the best, where the waters of the Darling wander down. He boiled his billy back of Burke and starved in City Park. He penned his poems in a shaky scrawl. But of all the old bush poets that have passed and left their mark, Henry Lawson was the greatest of them all. There's an Aussie we all know, where the western breezes blow. From north to south he's known far and wide. Henry Lawson was his name, but he never rose to fame until he crossed beyond the great divide. Until he crossed beyond the great divide.
Is there any place I can get some more music of Slim Dusty? I love the way that he sings. Anybody got a handle on that, let me know. Also, I'd like to know a whole lot more about the poetry of Henry Lawson. Let's shift gears a little bit here. A corroboree song, a gathering song from the Aboriginal peoples. We're going to listen to The Fathers to the Elders. This is an Aboriginal law time corroboree before the initiation of young boys into manhood. It's when they leave their mothers, and it gives the fathers a perspective. He is pleased that the elders have called his son to be taken bush in preparation for manhood. Right after that, a new song from the Warmarn community called Warmarn People.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo train station. Oh, it's more than 25 years ago. Past midnight. I'm the only one in this enormous, cavernous, abandoned train station waiting for the single train that's going to take me east through a raging snowstorm. Place isn't heated. Gone my way back to Albany. Sat there and thought about the fate of the trains, thought about the hustle and bustle, the hurly-burly, the people coming and going, the life of the train station when we first headed west in 1947 on the Union Pacific. And I made up a song sitting there, didn't have much else to do. It was called Daddy, What's a Train? Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? Well, wafting to me out of the blue, coming from nowhere, I got this recording from a little place in Western Australia, West Perth, Australia, and it's an environmental song done by a couple of guys called the Two Bob Wonder. And And I found out that when they decided to do this parody of Daddy Was a Train, they didn't even know where it had come from. I feel honored. Let's listen to Daddy What's a Tree.
Daddy, what's a tree? Is it something big and green? Does it stand up like a lamppost and have funny things called leaves? Does it look like plastic wood? Well, I suppose I should say something when they ask me, Daddy, what's a tree? It was not so long ago, we'd go camping in the south. The Jarrahs and the Carries standing so majestically. The beauty of the forest was difficult to describe. I guess that's why we lost them to the woodchipper's dollar drive. Daddy, what's a tree? Is it something big and green? Does it stand up like a lamppost and have funny things called leaves? Does it look like plastic wood? Well, I suppose I should say something when they ask me, Daddy, what's a tree? Well, they promised us good jobs and security, and all that we'd lose would be a few useless trees. But they forgot to tell us, perhaps they didn't know, how the beauty of the forest keeps replenishing the soul. Daddy, what's a tree? Is it something big and green? Does it stand up like a lamppost and have funny things called leaves? Does it look like plastic wood? Well, I suppose I should say something when they ask me, Daddy, what's a tree? Some folks is richer somewhere down the line, and eating lots of fancy foods and drinking more wine. But I wonder what they'll think in 50 years from here, when they hear their children's children asking, Daddy, what's a tree? Daddy, what's a tree? Is it something big and green? Does it stand up like a lamppost and have funny things called leaves? Does it look like plastic wood? Well, I suppose I should say something when they ask me, Daddy, what's a tree? Daddy, what's a tree? Is it something big and green? Does it stand up like a lamppost and have funny things called leaves? Does it look like plastic wood? Well, I suppose I should say something when they ask me, Daddy, what's a tree? Daddy wants a tree, is something big and green. Does it stand up like a lamppost and have funny things called leaves? Does it look like plastic wood? Well, I suppose I should.
That's it for this edition of Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. This is U Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest. Thanks for listening.